At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9/1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Palace are condemned to the Conference League, but is that actually a good thing?
The field is not quite as strong as it is in the Europa League, and Glasner will feel he can have a real shot at this.
What went wrong for Liverpool at Wembley?
For Ismaïla Sarr! And that's 2-2!
Van Dijk. I don't know where the big fella's going.
And how are Bournemouth shaping up for the new season?
We have lost or are losing 75% of our back four. I think any team would struggle.
Hello, I'm Ian McIntosh and welcome to Route 1. It's football fast, no faff. You know how it works by now, so let's crack on. Let's go Route 1.
Deep breath from De Bennett. Who scores into the top corner. And after winning the FA Cup final here in May, Crystal Palace beat the league champions Liverpool.
So the original plan for today's show was to open by garlanding Crystal Palace with flowers after they went toe-to-toe with Liverpool and beat them on penalties at Wembley. It was a great game. They played really well. They were worth it. And then CAS, the Court of Arbitration for Sport, weed all over their chips on Monday morning by confirming that their demotion to the Conference League will stand. Actually, it's worse than that. Palace have to beat either Fredrikstad or Viking first just to fully realise that demotion. It's not what Steve Parish and his parish would have wanted, but is it actually a good thing? Palace did, after all, break a 119-year trophy duck by beating Man City at Wembley. They've just followed it up by winning the Community Shield at Wembley. Surely Oliver Glasner will set his sights on the very realistic possibility of winning the Conference League as well, assuming they get there. What do you think, Greg Lee, freelance football writer and Palace expert?
I think he absolutely will, Ian. We saw again yesterday at Wembley that Palace can compete with some of the best teams in the division, some of the best teams in Europe by extension. And I guess the only silver lining from this demotion to the Conference League is that it does give Palace a better chance of going further. The field is not quite as strong as it is in the Europa League, and Glasner will feel he can have a real shot at this. He'll want a deeper squad, though, if Palace to compete across four fronts, as he's already hinted he wants to do. It's a reliance on a core group of players, and Palace might struggle to get those players to play 40-plus games in the same season. More depth is definitely needed. Only 2 signings so far this summer, and neither of them started at the weekend. So there's a lot of work to do still in the last few weeks. It's been a difficult summer off the pitch, not only with the legal proceedings with UEFA and CAS, but also Dougie Friedman departed as sporting director in March. So it's the first transfer window without him. He's been influential in a lot of the signings Palace have made in recent years. And that, combined with the distractions of these court cases, have definitely hampered Palace's activity. Still a few weeks to go, though, and Glasner will want more in if he is going to do something in the Conference League. He's got a great cup record, though, the FA Cup, the Community Shield. He won the Europa League at Frankfurt, reached the final of the Pokal one year as well. So he knows what it takes to go far in these knockout competitions. And with him at the helm, I think Palace have got a real chance.
Greg Lee is a freelance football writer for TalkSport, 442 and many others. What about Liverpool, though? What have we learned from their afternoon? Well, nothing concrete, because it was just one game in roasting sunshine with lots of new players and a football season is very long. But I think, on the basis of what we've seen, we can agree that Liverpool are going to be very interesting this year. Now, essentially, Arne Slot has found himself in the age-old control versus power debate. If he plays 4-3-3 with a defensive midfielder, as he mostly did last season, he has control of the midfield and thus the game. If he plays 4-2-3-1 with Florian Wirtz as number 10, as he mostly did on Sunday, he has the power to destroy any team in Europe. but he can't do both at the same time. And that's where the fun begins. In an effort to bolster that two-man midfield, Slot apparently encouraged his new left-back, Milos Kerkez, to invert and provide support. Oliver Glasner is a canny operator, and it wasn't long before Palace was spanking long balls into the Kerkez-shaped hole on the flank. Daniel Munoz, for me, one of the most underrated players in the league, was having the time of his life galloping into space, and rest assured, every manager in the Premier League will have taken note. Now, it should be said, as always, that this is real life, it's not a video game. Fluid formations require patience as players learn their roles and the way they interact with each other. Ryan Gravenberch will be back soon, and besides, it may well be that this Kerkez gambit proves a masterstroke. But it certainly looks like a vulnerability right now, and Liverpool didn't have many of those last season. But let's not get too carried away. There were a lot of positives here for them. Ekitike scored a fine goal and he actually missed two easier chances. Wirtz looked extremely exciting in the free roll. And special mention for Curtis Jones completing every single pass as a deep-lying midfielder. They're going to be just fine. It's just, I suspect they won't quite have it all their own way this year.
Sheffield United have conceded four poor goals in losing 4-1.
I can ask for the manager to resign.
One game.
After one game. That was a complete shambles.
The Championship got underway over the weekend and there was no shortage of drama. Birmingham, and I say this as someone who really doesn't like them because I'm still angry about them nicking Barry Fry from Southend in 1993, they could feel more than a little aggrieved to only draw with Ipswich. That was a controversial night. Wrexham, they were served with a brutal welcome to the Championship slap down by Southampton. And Stoke, who are in their eighth season in the second flight and haven't finished higher than 14th yet, they blew Derby away at the Bet365. But was there a more surprising result than Sheffield United's 4-1 drubbing at home to Bristol City? The Blades only just missed out on promotion last year. They got 92 points. They were beaten in the playoff final at Wembley. And they sacked manager Chris Wilder and replaced him with Ruben Sellers. And on Saturday, they were so bad they were booed off the pitch. Was this a one-off? A bit of first-day nerves? Or should Blades fans be worried? We'll keep an eye on them. In the last 24 hours, we've seen some significant and fairly surprising developments regarding Manchester City's wide players. On the left, and I did say he should join Spurs, but this is just as good, Jack Grealish is set to ditch the Etihad bench to quite possibly become Everton's first hero at their new stadium. The Toffees will cover a significant whack of Grealish's wages, and they've negotiated a £50 million buy option, but this isn't a signing for the accountants, it's for the romantics. Royal blue shirt on, socks down, mini shin pads in. Give that man the freedom of the Hill Dickinson. I still can't get used to that. Switching our attention to the right side, it looks like Savinho might be on the move just a year into his Manchester adventure. Spurs have tabled an opening £43 million bid, which has been rejected, but they're still talking. Pep Guardiola has never been one to stand in the way of players who want to leave, which is either very magnanimous or very touchy. Either I wish you nothing but the best or I never loved you anyway. Can football clubs have transfer droughts? Are transfer droughts a thing? We're not talking about clubs who've been banned from transfers. We're talking about Newcastle. Well, either way, the drought may soon be over. The Piff has finally made it rain with AC Milan's German international centre-back Malik Thiaw expected to complete a £35 million move, unless Manchester United or Liverpool or Chelsea steal in again to ruin it all. A centre-back by trade, an occasional right-back and centre midfielder by circumstance, Thiaw's versatility could make him a big hit on Tyneside. If they get this one over the line, by God, can you imagine if they don't? Now, in the very first episode of Route 1, we brought you news of Boca Juniors equaling a club record streak of 11 games without a win. Well, finally, after a two-week wait for their next game, Boca have broken the record by only drawing 1-1 with Racing Club. Or Racing Club. We don't know. We didn't check. They did, at least, score an 88th-minute equaliser, and everyone enjoys a late equaliser, right? No, it's the embarrassing club record that you're thinking about, isn't it? The skies have darkened for beleaguered club president, the legendary Juan Román Riquelme. And while chatting to 442 magazine about Alexander Isak's attempts to leave Newcastle, Mikel Antonio took a swipe at football clubs in general we think. He said, as a player, loyalty in the game has really gone, and rightly so, because clubs no longer treat players like they used to. Why should the player be loyal to a club? We are meat to them. As soon as we start going stale, it's time to sell or throw away. So if a club is going to think about the money side of things, well, why shouldn't the player? Interesting. I wonder what he really means. Sour grapes after being released after a decade at West Ham, or just an honest reflection of 17 years in the game? Whatever it is, it'll be music to the ears of TNT, who announced Antonio as a new pundit this afternoon. That might be one of the signings of the summer. Bournemouth are set to complete the signing of Lille centre-back Bafodi Diakate for about £35 million. Now, that is a big chunk of change, but that's the sort of move you can make when you're about to pocket £55 million from PSG for Ilya Zabani to add to the £95 million already in the coffers after selling Dean Howson and Milos Kerkez. We caught up with broadcaster, commentator and Bournemouth fan Paul Scott to gauge supporters' expectations for the season. Too much change? Or is change just simply no problem when you operate this smoothly?
It's a tricky one after the highs of the last campaign. I mean, we did start to run out of steam in the final few weeks of the season, which is perhaps unsurprising when you consider the style that Andoni Iraola likes to play. We have lost or are losing 75% of our back four. I think any team would struggle losing the quality of Kerkez, Howson, and it looks like Zabani's on his way as well. We have brought in Truffert, a fullback, and it looks like we're bringing in a centre-back as well. So it's a kind of a one-in, one-out policy, but the question is, can they adapt to Andoni Iraola's style? Obviously, we know it's quite intense. It's quite a unique way of playing, and whether they'll be able to adapt and hit the ground running is one of the main questions. I'm also intrigued to see what the new signings are like. The recent signings, the Kerkezes of this world, were brought in by Richard Hughes. This is our first off-season without Richard Hughes as director of football, who's gone to Liverpool. So it'll be interesting to see whether the new recruits and the recruitment team have the same sort of quality that Richard Hughes seemed to possess. In terms of expectations for next season, hopes and expectations, well, they're a different thing, aren't they? I'd like a cup run. I think that's something that Bournemouth fans have been starved off in recent years. And I think anything around mid-table would be acceptable. I don't see us dropping off to such an extent that we'll be in a relegation battle. Anything from sort of 8th to 13th and a cup run would be acceptable. We've kept some key players as well. Semenyo is staying, Tavernier, Kluivert, they're all still here. I think Evan Nilsson up top will be even better in his second season. I think he could be a real handful for some Premier League defences. So I think mid-table and a cup run would be what I'd be hoping for this season.
Thank you for all your messages and reviews. Dinu delivered the goods. He said lots of nice things about us in a 5-star review on Apple. Thank you, Dino. Very much appreciated. Aidan Almeida, he left us a lovely message on Spotify that weirdly kind of morphed into a Tottenham-themed cry for help. Good luck on Wednesday, Aidan. Comfortably Dumb messaged on Spotify too. He compared the show to a birthday cake sandwich, which I initially took as a compliment, but now I'm worried because I've since been made aware that Tesco released an actual birthday cake sandwich to howls of fury and confusion from the masses, and so this might actually be a sort of covert bad review. But you know what? I'll give it the benefit of the doubt. If you want to message us, you can email route1pod@gmail.com. It's never too late for Stick With Me, but there's never a bad time to send a question in. And do remember, we are an independent podcast now, so please give us a review, tell a friend, drop a link on Reddit or Blue Sky or wherever you do your virtual socialising. It all helps. That was Route 1. It was Football Fast, No Faff. I've been Ian McIntosh. Your producer was Cy Watts. Chris Smith was in the writer's room. Jackson White was our intrepid work experience warrior, somehow fashioning a powerful fan from a pile of metal with nothing more than a 2p piece and a kitchen knife. We'll be back tomorrow. See you then.